It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, welcome to this week's very special edition of the Spurs Show. Thank you very much for joining us. On tonight's show, please welcome my co-host, Mr. Theo Delaney.
Good evening.
Nice to see you. It's nice we're doing them together.
Yeah, it is. Normally, it's a rare treat.
We're normally all tonight.
Yeah,
it's a rare treat.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, and joining us tonight, and I know many of you know this show is about to happen. I'm delighted it's going to happen. 854 games. Extraordinary amount, isn't it, for Spurs? 31 goals we just said off air.
51.
There you are. I knew it was a one. Two FA Cup winners' medals, two League Cup winners' medals, two UEFA Cup winner medals, ex Football Writers Player of the Year, ex manager and assistant manager of Tottenham as well. Mr. Steve Pearman joins us.
Thank you very much. Nice welcome.
That's amazing. That's like a sort of 10-minute intro because there's so much to cover.
Sure. And, you know? And I always think people forget the FA Youth Cup.
I did forget the Youth Cup.
I see it as quite a big trophy because when you're under 18, that's probably the best you can win.
Yeah.
Of course, I was in the first team by then.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
But for Tottenham Hotspur to have won that in the day was quite special.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think that deserves to be on that line of...
Quite right.
Fair enough. What we're going to do on tonight's show, we're going to very briefly look back at the United and Burnley games. Very briefly again, have a quick mention about Bayern Munich on tomorrow, isn't it, Munich?
Yeah.
And then Wolves. But we're really here to talk about an incredible, book, which we'll go into detail about the book later on. So we will do that later. Lily White and Blue, Steve's autobiography. Very, very quickly then, gentlemen. Steve, you were doing a signing at the Spurs Megastore at the weekend, so you managed to catch the Burnley game.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Does that bring back memories of seeing a Tottenham side thrash a team like that? It's been a while since you took a team apart.
Yeah, it was strange in some ways. I couldn't link it to anything in the past. Nothing is the same, is it? The stadium, the manager that I got used to is... Yeah. Even changed, and Burnley certainly didn't look like the Burnley of my day. And but of course, they've caused us problems in the past, and you need to get that early goal, which probably made all the difference.
Because they're normally, as you just alluded, they're normally a really, really tough team. We lost there last week. I remember that. God, in your day, the famous midweek, Graham Roberts' two own goals, wasn't it, for memory?
Well, I don't remember that actually. But I remember that game.
Yes.
I didn't remember the two own goals.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the game he scored two own goals.
I don't remember the own goals either, but it was a shocker, I know that.
We were in a run of games, and Trevor Stephen was the star man for
Burnley. Before he went to Everton, right?
Before he went upwards.
Yeah.
And sat in the bath after, Mickey Hazard said, "Stevie, when we scored," after about 5 minutes, I think, and we were just in a run of games where we kept winning. If you see the games that we won up to that point, we were knocking everyone over. When we scored in 5 minutes, I thought he was going to win 6 or 7-1. I said, Mickey, that's exactly why we didn't.
Yeah.
Let's all now have a rest because this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
Okay, Mick.
But we always had over the years, I mean, the present team as well this season, we've lost at home to Newcastle and lost at Brighton. Even throughout your time, and we'll go into more detail about your career, but there was always times within all those Spurs teams where we always used to lose the games you didn't expect.
Yep. Although when you think about it, so does every club.
Yeah. You think it is? So you don't think it's just the Tottenham thing?
No, it's an expectancy of the supporters turning up saying, well,
we're going to win today.
Of course we're going to win.
Yeah.
Guess what?
Yeah.
It's a two-horse race. Yeah. if football was that easy, we'd all win the pools, and we don't.
Yeah, fair enough. But I mean, obviously, the game at the weekend is obviously going to be talked about by the Hommins-Son goal, which... I was thinking on the way here, have we seen at Tottenham a goal like it? People of a certain age will say
Greaves
against United and Leicester, but then he was like halfway line taking on players. Runs, I can remember, Ginola away to Barnsley, I was there, but again, that was from the halfway line. I can't remember seeing a Spurs player running from that, was it 90 yards?
He was
just
outside the opposition box, yeah.
Was it, yeah, yes, our box. Yeah,
edge of our box,
and straight through. Can you remember seeing any other teams you play for, whatever? Have you seen anything like that?
Sure. Okay, so what was special about that goal in my eyes was that, if you remember, I was a midfield player and I went to the back and the plan was for me to bring the ball out. Mm. So I was never a player that could run at a player 1v1, drop my shoulder and go past him. That would be a Jimmy Greaves goal.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, I've been talking about further back up the pitch. Mm. So I very quickly worked out that if I run between two players, especially forwards, they don't really want to chase you. They don't really. And the fact it's two of them, they sort of look at each other.
You do it.
And then it's too late.
Yeah.
So albeit I always say I lacked half a yard of pace, I could go through that hole when they didn't really want to chase you.
Yeah.
And I'm critical of today's game, not Tottenham, today's game, that centre-halves pass the ball across the back to a player that's matched up. So they get it and pass it to the fullback who's matched up by a wide player.
Yeah.
Then it comes back to him and then he passes it, etc. I think more players should run at the middle of two opponents and then see what happens. They either drag them in, so you now give them doubt. Mm. Who's going to take the ball? I thought you go through the middle. And when Son did that first one, it then kept happening.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's in his mentality or what, but when you watch it again, he kept going at the middle of the two that were against him. He didn't actually run past anyone with, as I described, the drop of the shoulder.
No.
Yeah.
He just went for the space, which is very clever, I think.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing goal. It just kept opening up.
Yeah.
And every time he went for two, the middle of two, he gave them doubt.
Yeah.
And no one answered it.
Mm. Yeah.
Therefore, he kept going and kept going and kept going. He didn't have to wall pass. Mm. He didn't have to drop his shoulder. He didn't have to do anything really special other than the decision to go through the middle of the next two players.
Mm. Yeah.
And I felt once he got in the final, towards the final third, they were worried about red cards. Because they should really have. I was thinking, Sean Dyche must be saying, chop him down. Presumably, they were worried about a red card. And again, that's a case of you get the red card, I don't want to get the red card kind of thing. Maybe.
But it's an unusual ploy for him. Because if you think he's a wide player, when he picks the ball up, he's got an immediate opponent that he's got to run at.
Yeah.
And then do exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Mm.
Step over.
He did say he was looking to pass. So he looked up for Dele.
Yeah.
But Dele was, there was a player in front of him. He looked up.
Again,
so he just kept going.
Yeah. Again, that gives the two opponents doubt. Yeah. Oh, he's going to pass it. That's Andy.
Yeah,
he hasn't passed it.
Yeah.
Through the middle.
Yeah.
And once it was like a slalom. He just kept going through the middle of them. And therefore, that makes it a great, great goal.
And the pace.
But not
well.
A Jimmy Greaves goal.
No, it wasn't.
Different kind of a run. But the fabulous thing about it was also that You see runs like that in games, and by the time the guy gets there, he's so knackered that the finish is rubbish.
Yeah,
the finish was perfection, wasn't it?
Well.
Incredible. He's run all that way.
Yeah.
And then he executes the finish to perfection. That's when everyone goes, wow, because you just can't believe it's going to
happen. He gained more confidence by being successful at what he was attempting to do rather than lose his legs.
His confidence
gave him extra... I've got a chance of scoring. Yeah. And he's the type that when he gets a chance of scoring, he becomes even more alive. He's alert anyway, that player. So,
I kind of felt sorry for Harry Kane because obviously he scored two fantastic goals.
Yeah.
Which most sort of...
And he had a great game all round.
Pundits and journos didn't really kind of talk about because everyone was talking about that goal. And they were the first one especially as well.
Yeah. It's amazing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he can sort of score every type of goal, can't he, Kane? Which is very unusual for a striker, I think.
Yeah, I've always appreciated his ability. I'm not saying when I first saw him play in the first team, although I don't see that much, that I thought he was going to be the success that he's been.
Since he's been
a regular in the team, I have appreciated him more and more, and actually, the most I've ever appreciated him was that game Saturday.
Oh, really?
Because I call Jimmy Greaves a professional goal scorer. Mm. Some of us, mere mortals, score goals sometimes and we don't really know why we scored or how we scored in terms of recreating it.
Right.
Harry knew exactly in them two goals what he was doing, where he was putting the ball, where the space was to hit, the timing, when to hit it. So... I just think he's gone to another level now.
Mm. It was amazing. I mean, the whole performance was more astonishing because of the awful display a few days before Old Trafford, which again, with this... it's been a few years now with Tottenham, certainly under Pochettino and maybe even AVB and further back, when it comes to these big key games against... what I still call the top six games.
Yeah,
but we still fall short. We still start
but you know what?
So slowly.
I really thought it was funny when you said, when we said that about you lose the silly games, but you know, that's a Tottenham thing, and you said actually that's a thing that all clubs have. You always think it's your own club. Yeah. But when you think about it, of course we're going to lose more games against the top six. Actually, our record isn't much worse, if it's worse at all, than the other top six against the top. Because they're the games you're going to lose.
But these away games, we always seem to concede early.
Yeah, there is that.
5 minutes, 5 minutes, we're one down.
There is that. That is disappointing. But I just think, you know, I don't think our record actually is that bad against the top. So it's bad in terms of how many we've lost, but that's just because they're the best teams, aren't they? I mean,
yeah.
I know. We've played well. We've won it, you know, in recent years.
Did you see that one, Steve? Did you manage to watch it?
I was driving somewhere, but heard it on the radio, and it appeared to me that it was sort of individual errors that cost us those.
Yes. The keeper was at fault.
Therefore,
keeper's at fault, and then it was a silly penalty. But it's one of those penalties that you're not always given.
Well, Oya gave the ball away just before for him to run on.
Yeah, that was the mistake.
But the frustrating thing was, very quickly, we got back into the game. We were lucky to be drawn up. Dele Alli, a wonderful goal, which again was barely mentioned by anti-Tottenham press because they're all going crazy over United. Barely mentioned what a great goal it was.
Yeah.
The way he brought the ball down, it was like Berbatov-like, wasn't he? He brought it down.
Yeah.
And so every Spurs fan there at halftime went, we'll go on and win this. We'll go on and win this now.
Yeah.
You know, we can't be as bad as that again.
Yeah.
But we were.
Yeah.
That was frustrating. And for Mourinho, we're still trying to get used to Mourinho.
Yeah.
And what's he going to do with the players he's got?
Yeah.
Because we know under this present chairmanship, there's not going to be that many changes this season, certainly, what he can do with those players. And that was a frustrating thing when you mentioned there was individual errors
the game. It wasn't the worst result in the context of a whole season when you consider what they did on Saturday, United. It looks like they're either in a little purple patch or they've actually turned a corner. But one thing's for sure, we didn't lose to a bad team. We go away to a good Man United team at Old Trafford and you lose by one goal. I mean...
And points-wise, it sort of didn't matter because then Chelsea lost the weekend
Chelsea
and we won. So we're still that six
Chelsea,
points behind Chelsea.
And
the goal difference was the same in Chelsea. And we sort of played Chelsea twice. So anyway, that's enough for now about the present team. Now, for listeners who've been with us for a long, long time, first, you came on our very first live show with you, Steve, back in 2011. So those of you who haven't heard that show, go to patreon.com/Spurs show, click the Spurs Flicks option. So I didn't want to cover so much that we covered there Just so people sort of understand. Firstly, with the book, which obviously helped with the writing with Spurs show regular Adam Powley, it's how many years have you been thinking about doing a book? Because surely you must have been asked a lot.
Well, I answered a question in front of Toby and, and the publishers that said probably 5 years they've been asking me.
Right.
And it was actually, they're telling me it's 10.
Right.
There you are.
So that time flies.
Yeah.
I just didn't have the time.
Yeah.
So, but all the time I wasn't writing it, I was preparing stuff. Mm. Because when you're at Exeter City and things are happening in football in general, but especially at the lower level, and it's coming up about what turns players on or off and managerial changes and all that, it's all the same at the lower level than the top level. So I was just taking sort of even mental notes, but paper notes as well, as per things that I thought would be of interest to people. Mm. When eventually I do it.
So. What's incredible, though, for those of you who haven't bought the book yet, and we'll tell you where you can get it afterwards, it's really, really detailed. It's not like that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the funnest bit that looks in the book you couldn't remember and had to go and watch back was actually the 81 replay. And you write that like you're watching it the first time.
I was watching it with... not the first time.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
I was watching it with Adam.
Yeah.
So actually was a good way of re-watching it.
Yeah.
So, because as I'm making comments, I sort of knew he was taking notes, but it wasn't evident until I read through it.
Right. Yeah.
So, I said some strange things, I think, but that's just what you do when you're watching a game.
Yeah.
I'm a spectator all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I mean, firstly, again, what we're going to... Going back to when you did the show back 8 years ago now, bloody hell, we covered your early career, kind of up until 82, and we sort of effectively run out of time, so we're going to cover other stuff tonight. Firstly, there's a wonderful foreword in the book written by Glenn Hoddle, who, again, we've been lucky to have on also a couple of times. I certainly was close to tears reading it. You must have been welling up when you read the words he wrote about you.
No. I know that's what he thinks about me. I mean, you've got to be stupid to ask someone to write you forward if you...
I believe you've written this.
But as a judgment, my wife was in tears.
Oh, there you are.
Really?
Yeah.
My wife was in
tears. No, it's because it was lovely. It was beautiful words he wrote. It's
fantastic words.
Yeah. You know?
He's a proper gentleman.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I was one type of player. He was a different type of player. And when you're talking about management and selection, it's about matching those players together.
Mm, absolutely.
And we fitted... Refitted, and I knew my role was to get him the ball.
Mm.
And the more Glenn Hoddle had the ball, the better team we were. Mm. And, you know, Glenn has his critics, and even good friends of mine would always put the other case to me. Steve, you're telling us how great he is, but he can't do this and he can't do that. And I'd say, but you've got to talk about what he can do, because what he can do is so special that... You know, there's not that quarterback passer in other teams that can see what's happening 60, 70 yards away.
Mm.
And, you know, we were talking about the Archibald and Crooks gig you had. And they very quickly had to learn that Glenn could deliver the ball to their running.
Mm.
So don't waste your time coming back to feet. Just run forward and he will find you. Okay. Not 10 out of 10, but the vast majority. I used to make runs. If the ball was into Glenn, I'd make runs from right back, which of course is always risky because in case it breaks down. So I had a trust of his ability to retain the ball.
Mm.
And that if I was the best option, he would find me.
Mm.
And the best option might be, once I've passed it into him, Tony Galvin out on the left wing. Okay, well... A little bit of wasted energy, but no problem, because he's picked the better option in his eyes. And who am I to argue with that? So there's always been an affinity between me and Glenn. And I'm rated as a leader of the team, as captain, etc., with my experience. I would always make the point that in play, Glenn was the leader of how we played. Not the tactics, but the feeling about our performance was generated by Glenn's form, I think.
Yeah.
So, yes, I was leader, but at a certain point, this leader had to play second or third fiddle to other players in the team. Mm. you know, you could, I couldn't dictate to Ozzy, for instance. Ozzy did what Ozzy did. Mm. And Glenn was just a very special player and person at that.
Mm. Let's start the stuff that you talk about in the book that we haven't covered before. This is the sort of time at your club post Bill Nick, when you were kind of in a fixture of the team, obviously, in 74. You'd already captained the side at 22, initially when Martin Peters got injured, but when he was back, you were vice-captain. I didn't know this stuff. That's why I'm sort of bringing it out from the book now. In 1974, some of the coaching staff thought your legs had gone, and Coventry City came in for you, and according to your book, you were extremely close to leaving.
I was an inch away. Mm. An inch. So when people talk about you being loyal, etc., of course, the end result is that I was loyal.
Yeah.
Tottenham were also loyal to me, to employ me for 19 years. That was the point where that loyalty just ebbed. And it was because Tottenham, the Bill Nicholson, Eddie Bailey, thought my legs had gone. When I started off at 17, probably 2 years, I didn't do a lot wrong. And I was been talking about as a future England international, et cetera, et cetera. And within getting an ankle injury, but playing on with it, my confidence suffered, my form went, and eventually they started to question me. I mean, Bill Nicholson didn't ever leave me out. Mm. Yes, he did after Crystal Palace, but that was said because of other things. Mm. So I couldn't have been playing that badly as per for the team.
Yeah.
But I knew I wasn't playing great. And as I say, my confidence had gone. Mm. And people started to question their first thoughts of me. So
you hear this, when this is going on.
But you heard it from a mate that they thought your legs had gone, right?
Well,
right.
Charlie Faulkner, the chief scout.
Yeah.
I lived in Northolt. He lived in Hillingdon. Yeah. Chief scout of Tottenham lived in Hillingdon.
Yeah.
We first come into contact with him. My brother wrote to him as chief scout at QPR for me to have a trial as about a 13-year-old because no one was ever going to see me because our grammar school didn't play competitive games.
All right.
So my brother thought I was good enough, and Charlie, I think, did not even answer the letter. And then when Charlie ended up knocking on the door, the first scout, my brother said, "You're Mr. Faulkner." I said, "How do you know?" He said, "I wrote to you." But it showed that my brother was on top of things.
So
he sort of apologised for not answering the letter, et cetera, and wished he had have done, of course. So there was a closeness between the family, and Charlie Faulkner probably lived in our house for about 6 months.
Right.
I mean, two or three or four times a week. Mm. And if he wasn't there, he was writing letters and et cetera. So that's what a scout has to do. He has to be on the job. And it was easier for him to be on the job because we lived about 7 or 8 miles apart. Mm. So he got upset in the afternoon when they would come back from the training ground. They would discuss today's session and what was good and what was wrong and what needed improving. And it came up about me that they thought my legs had gone. And I think he described it to me on the phone as that I got very upset about a conversation about you, Steve. And I ended up throwing a cup and saucer of tea at Eddie Bailey.
Oh, dear.
So, but it's good that staff have those sorts of confrontations because this is what football's about.
Yeah.
As much as you want to discuss on your show, staff discuss every single day everything that happens.
Yeah.
So Charlie made some comment, if he's gone, if his legs are gone, I'll show you how much I can go and get for him. Phone me to say that, which was a little bit of treachery on Charlie's behalf, but he was doing it more for me than the club. But, of course, he never thought this would come out. Mm. And Charlie's dead now. God bless him. But he said that Bill Nick, you're going to get a phone call from Bill Nick. He's going to call you in tomorrow. He's going to tell you that he's asked the club for two players and they've asked back for you. Mm. I said, "Charlie, who is it?" He said, "Coventry City." Okay, so he said, please, Steve, don't let Bill know that you know about this. And of course.
They're a decent side for people who don't remember.
At the time, yeah.
In 74. They're not like they are now.
No, top league.
They're a top team.
Top league, Jimmy Hill thinking, the academy, etc.
Yeah.
They played against us in the FA Youth Cup final, etc. So, Bill Nick did call me in the next day. He did sit me down. He said, Steve, listen, I've never thought about letting you go. Never. But I've been onto a club asking about two players. I want to sort of revamp the team. Mm. And they've asked back for you. He said it would take you plus money. But what do you think? Are you interested? So I said, where is it, Bill? He said, I won't say. Okay, well, that doesn't really help me, Bill. Yeah. So, if it's Newcastle, no. Mm. If it's within distance of London, because I'm a home bird, I was never, ever going to be in Deeds or all that stuff. So he said, no, I'm not saying. So I said, okay, well, yes, I'm interested.
Wow.
Are you sure what you, that answer? Are you sure what you're saying? I said, Bill, you've asked me.
Yeah.
There must be a reason that you're asking me. Mm. So I'm telling you, off the back of your question, yes, I'm interested. Really, what my body was saying is I'm struggling a bit. Mm. Perhaps a change of club might do me some good. I don't think I'd have ever asked to go. Mm. But now, all my life, I've been the same. If you don't want me,
I
don't
want you. I mean,
if you talk about the England career or lack of the England career, I'd say if England don't want Steve Perriman doesn't want fucking England. Trust me, that's it. There's enough going on in the rest of my life for that not to hurt me as such. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look back years later and you think, that probably could have been a bit better. Anyway, so he said, I suggest you go home and you speak to your people that you love and trust and ask them their opinion of the answer you've just given.
But he hasn't told you where it was, though.
So yeah, he hasn't told me.
What's the conversation with your family?
He hasn't told me.
This is so strange because, for a start, he'd raised questions, albeit he didn't know that you knew, but he'd raised questions about whether your legs had gone.
Yes.
So there's that. And then he won't tell you what the club is and expects you to go. And then when you say, yeah, I'm interested, he's like, I'm hurt and appalled. Go and talk to him. I mean, what?
He obviously was not in a good place, Bill.
Right. Well, that's what subsequently we found, right?
Obviously.
That's the.
So I didn't go home and speak to anyone. I'd probably mention it to my wife. We might be off, etc. But actually, we won't have to move because it's Coventry. Mm. So it was easier for me to get to Coventry, where I live, than the Tottenham. M40 was finished.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Bosh, down you go. So he called me in the next day. I went to see him before training. I said, Bill, same answer. Yeah, interested. He said, I truly don't believe what you're saying. So I'll see you after training and fine. Anyway, he didn't ask to see me after training. I went home thinking, isn't it? And then he resigned that night.
That night?
Mm. Mm. So I think my bit was part of it.
Well, I was about to say, I know the results hadn't been good near the end there, but absolutely it was part of it.
Yeah.
Must have been. There's got to be coincidence that night. He decided I've had enough.
Yeah, it was like a final
straw. You know, the final straw, someone I brought through this team. And
he's prepared to walk away.
Regular.
My, you know, my extra thinking incredible. About it was that whereas when I got into the team, I say that the team I got into had too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
Mm.
And I came in as an Indian to work. I wasn't really a runner in my development as a player. I was a passer. I was an inside forward passer. It developed when I was in the team for want of results that I had to, for me to get selectable, I needed to bring something to that team that it didn't have. And what it didn't have was legs.
Mm.
Okay, Mullery could win the ball, of course, but I suppose Philip Beale mopped up, but off the back of the opponent's sort of loose ball and then...
But certainly not in the middle.
Etc. So, when the team started to struggle, and remember we had three players finish early through injury, Roger Morgan, Peter Collins, Jimmy Pearce. Bill wasn't replacing players as he'd been done in the past. I think the rest were catching up with the aura of signing for Spurs.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite such a big club to join, like when Mike England signed, for instance. He was the top centre-half in Britain. He could have signed for anyone. He chose Spurs.
Yeah.
Gilly signed for Spurs, albeit got offered more money to go a lot of other places. He wanted to play for Bill Nicholson and Tottenham Hotspur, famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was starting to lose its glitter. Yeah. And therefore, I got elevated to back to where, if I'd have come in the team at that point, I could have handled the playing part. I'd almost forgotten how to play for 3 years. I'd just run around, which is what I tell in the book. My brother saying, I'm not watching you play again. Why not? Because all you do is run. He's never going to leave you out. You work too hard. Yeah. Or you used to be a footballer, a passer, and now all you do is run. So this fella that supplied the running to the team, now it was not the same team, had to be more than a runner, which you could say is a bit sort of not fair. And I couldn't deliver both, but off the back of the lack of confidence I had through this bad ankle.
But the incredible thing was then, because obviously a lot of players we spoke to at the time, Terry Neill came in. Now, a lot of people looking back, most fans, because he then went back to Arsenal, you know, he's sort of airbrushed out of Tottenham history. But he came straight up to you and sort of said, you're in and whatever. And
he said,
you know.
Okay. So our first training session was on the track. Steve, you at the front with somebody else. And then we led the run in. And I couldn't understand his accent. So if he said a fast lap in 65 seconds, I'm saying to the other person, what did he say?
Right.
Okay, well, let's do it. So anyway, at the end of it all, at the end of that session, I think we probably then went into the gym, he walked past me, said, Steve, by the way, you're going nowhere. Okay. I'd like to say I was delighted with that, but I'm still in the same lack of confidence that I had before Bill Nick left.
Had you spoken to anyone at Coventry at this stage? Had any kind of so you haven't spoken to them yet?
No.
Contracts or anything?
No.
Right. Okay.
I knew they wanted me because of the history I had with Coventry, and it was one of those teams that I always did well against. Yeah. Always. So that's how close I was. And you know, it brings up the question of for instance, I don't particularly want to talk about the sugar era, but and this is no way an excuse for Sol Campbell to leave the way he did, but it's about how comfortable you feel at the club. It's how much you buy into what the club stands for and the supporters. And you know, for 2 years the supporters loved me. They started to sort of query a little bit when I had my sort of downturn. But the leaders of the club, do they look at you? Do they say hello? Do they smile at you? Would be the directors on the bus. You know, there's a feeling of warmth or not. And, you know, for instance, if I can just say briefly about the sugar era, if I'd have been a player under sugar, I would not have stayed 19 months, let alone 19 years.
Let's carry on after this very short break.
Hello and welcome to Seeing Red, a true crime podcast brought to you by me, Mark, and my co-host, Bethan. Each week we take a deep dive into the dark world of true crime. Cases have ranged from the murder of Christina Abbott, a high-class escort who was killed by a sadistic client, to the Peru 2, a pair of young women convicted of smuggling drugs in South America. Whilst always respectful to the victims of these crimes, we do like to tell each story in our own unique style, with humour and lots of f***ing swearing. Join us every Wednesday for a new episode of Seeing Red, a true crime podcast, wherever you get yours.
And we're back for the break. A lot of players we've spoken to talked about how Terry Neill came in and moves a lot of the senior players on. Martin Peters went. Martin Chivers certainly didn't play as much under him, and there was various other players. How did you find him as a manager and as a person?
Found him very open. I found him to be giving me more instructions as per my personal game than Bill Nick or Eddie Bailey had ever given me. That's not to say they were bad people or bad judges or bad coaches. A lot of the old school thinking is, we trust you enough to play you, get on with it. Mm. Now, that sounds a bit amateurish, but the result from Bill Nicholson's, and I've spoke to Souness a lot about this with his Liverpool team that he did so well in, no real instruction. Right. We've bought you, we've paid this much money for you. You think we're going to tell you how to play?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Listen to the others. Yeah. Listen to the others and get on with it.
Interesting.
And you sort of cope with that. So, but he, I think he knew about my lack of confidence. I think he had liked me, what he's seen, not so much television in those days, but I think he mentioned a few things about seeing me as a schoolboy player. Mm. And that I thought that you were this and I thought you were that, etc. I think you need to get back to a bit of this.
Right.
And so that sounds very critical of Bill Nick and Eddie Bailey. I'm not meaning to be, but it was different.
So how did your game change as a result of that?
He just wanted me to run forward. He thought that I played behind the ball too much, which is really what Bill Nick and Eddie wanted from me. They wanted me to be the security.
The holder.
Behind Mallory and Peters to do their stuff going forward. And I mean, it was a role that I was comfortable in, and I understood it, and fine. Mm. So, but he said to me, for instance, this is a very basic instruction. He said, "Pat kicks the ball long. I want you to run past our centre forward jumping for the ball. I want you to run past him as if it's going to be flicked on, or they're both going to miss it, which can happen." Mm. And I think he was just trying to put that sort of positive run in me. Mm. He said, "I know you're going to get back. Mm. I know. I've seen it for years. You recover as good as anyone." It just made me think in a forward way. Mm. And I scored, I think, 6 goals that season for him. Mm. Well, I'd never scored 6 before. Yeah. I'm famous for scoring 1 league goal per year for 17 seasons, at least one. Yeah. And most of them were 1. Yeah. but this year was 6, and it just showed how much...
Interesting.
Just that simple sort of instruction.
Mm. I mean, that season, when he came in, we had that new manager bounce. We actually started well, but then it went back to where we were before Bill left, and obviously it went down to, and funny enough, I saw this, it was recently on BT Sport, Big Match Revisited, and there was one of you, there was the three key games that all fans remember. There was the Chelsea at home, which effectively sent them down.
Yes.
There was the Arsenal away, they were the first two. I mean, what's your memories of it? Because that was probably the first time you at Tottenham had flirted with relegation. This must have been completely... Mm. It must have been the first time.
Yeah, because I get in the first team at 17. Yeah. I'm on, like, cloud 9. The very last word you'd hear from anyone at Tottenham in my growing up years was, "Well done." Mm. You never got a "well done."
Yeah.
They were so fearful of you getting above yourself.
Right.
And I'm not that type of character to actually get above myself. I mean, they used to think Souness was that type. Right. Oh, he's gonna fly. Mm.
Right.
So maybe they kept him down longer than they should have done because of that. So all of a sudden, I'm playing in 2 League Cup finals. I'm playing in a UEFA Cup final. I mean. As Mallory used to say, "Steve, enjoy it, because it don't happen very often, this." Mm. I know it's happened a lot for you, but it don't happen.
Yeah.
So, but then, of course, off the good comes some bad.
Yeah.
And the bad was the relegation. We were signing second or third class players, nowhere near the quality that Bill Nick had had. Even some that Bill brought in towards the end of his career were not really up to the required standard.
Yeah.
And
why, from your perspective, you're on the inside, and you're by the time we went down, you're extremely well established, pivotal figure in that. And you look at this around you, you've seen the good times, and now you're seeing bad times that no one could have ever anticipated when you first started.
Yep.
From your perspective, how does that happen? Is it just the board not spending, being tight with money?
All sorts of stories about black money. The other clubs were paying under the table,
To get the better
fees,
players.
To get the better players.
Right.
That would encourage a player to go there rather than here.
Yeah.
And we were missing out. It's obvious that we were missing out. And that therefore you're buying a sort of lower level of player that's so delighted to come to Tottenham without the extra incentives.
Mm.
Because if there were extra incentives, they wouldn't have come.
Yeah.
And because we were losing our shine, no doubt.
But that game, because a few of the ex-players have mentioned it, it went down to that Leeds United game that particular season. And a lot of players, again, we didn't know this until this started coming out. A lot of players talked about when Terry Neill took you all to see a hypnotist called Romark the Great at a hotel.
Who was
in order
told
to
us
well, a few, was a few
it
Alfie
Terry
Connor,
Naylor?
Martin, Terry, Alfie Connor, all told us, and Pat Jennings.
Yeah.
It was such a huge game for people who were too young. I mean, Leeds United were the champions and about to play a European Cup final.
Yeah, which
we were near the bottom, midweek game. We had to win. And on paper, form-wise, you kind of didn't see it.
Yeah.
Mm. It was huge. And apparently, do you remember this hypnotist and certain players had to have a one-on-one with him?
I don't remember the one-on-one. I don't think that I was that type of player that would have responded to that.
Right.
Personally.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I was kept out of the way. But we went to the typical type of hotel for the pre-match meal. We probably had to get there. If normally it would have been 4 o'clock, we probably had to get there at 2 o'clock. And there was this Romark situation of this meeting in a lounge, nice lounge. And he did some sort of trickery, and he did it with Cyril Knowles. And Cyril Knowles was laying flat on the with his neck resting on the back of a chair. And then he took the chair away. And Cyril was
levitating.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I mean, it looked very impressive.
Yeah.
I can't quite put together what that meant for the Leeds United game.
Yeah.
Other than entertainment value.
Yeah.
It was certainly entertaining. And if it was to take the mind off it, yeah, it does for a certain amount of time, but then you get in your car and you drive to the game and you get caught at lights and you're thinking, what's the time? And there's traffic and the importance of this game, etc. So, but I'm interested to know if certain players had individual sessions.
Yeah, they did. Some of them did. And obviously one was Chiv.
Yeah.
And Romark told Terry Neill, because Chiv was not in the team, he wasn't playing.
Yeah.
And he was brought back in because he said, I visualise you will score.
Yeah.
And he did score. I mean, I know Noble's got two that night, but I think Chiv did score.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the game where, and maybe I've said this in the book, but Alfie Conn sat on the ball.
Right.
And Billy Bremner, who I'd had wars with and battles with over the course of time, and our good times and then our not so good times, and as you mentioned, they're in the European, was it final?
Cup final.
Yeah, the actual European Cup final.
So they're still progressing, and we're going backwards. He said, Stevie, tell that Scottish prick or stronger that if he sits on the ball again, we're going to start trying.
Yeah. I've heard that.
That's like Terry Nader told us that. Yeah. You had to run over and tell him to stop
tonight, Alfie.
For Christ's sake.
Because they scored. I think Lorimer scored a scream and they got back in the game. And it was like, no, they mean it.
For sure.
Yeah.
But it was like one of those nights. I mean, that could be, for instance, when you are in the year when we won the everything at youth level, everything, other than one competition. We lost 1-0 at Colchester, and after 5 minutes, you knew that we weren't going to win that game.
Mm.
and it's almost like a third round at a cup.
Mm.
When you, as much as you should win it, there is something not right.
Yeah.
And it could have been that night for Leeds.
Yeah.
And we gained off the back of it and kept our position in the top league.
Yeah.
So, but interestingly, Terry Neill got a chance to join another club.
Yeah.
Where he thought he'd have had more of a chance
to do well.
To get the players that he wanted.
Yeah.
Now, maybe that's been proven right or wrong, but... Yeah.
But in fact, from a Tottenham, from a fan's point of view, of course, we were very, very pleased to see Terry Neill go because we regarded him as an Arsenal man all the way through.
Yeah.
And of course, eventually, not straight away, but the Birkinshaw's, he created his place in the Hall of Fame, didn't he? I mean, he was one of the great Tottenham managers. Really.
Well, look, I, there's so much we want to cover and we've sort of run out of show one and we're going to do this in two parts. So we'll be, for those listening at home, we'll be back later on this week. For now... Steve Pearlman, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at spursshow.net.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.